Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning into Iris today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, September 15th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's read the weather forecast first thing today. Some showers, even a storm possible into early part of the weekend. This forecast comes from KCRG. A couple of cold fronts will be moving through the state over the next 36 hours, giving us a couple of shots at some rain. The first is on the way later on Friday, though we'll be fairly quiet for much of the day. Areas of clouds will be possible during the morning and afternoon, gradually increasing again by the evening. That's when the showers become possible, especially in our northern zones, first by afternoon into the evening. This activity spreads southeast with time, potentially bringing some showers to the central and southern zones during the high school football game timeframe. While it's not expected to be a washout, just be aware of the possibility if you're headed out this evening. Temperatures for any area seeing sunshine today will reach the upper 70s to low 80s ahead of the front this evening. Those that see more cloudiness for most of the day could see highs held back into the low to mid 70s. After a potential break near or after daybreak on Saturday, there will be a second cold front yet to go. This moves through the area by late morning into the afternoon and could bring a few more showers or storms along with it. Recent trends have been to speed up both fronts just a bit. This could lead to most of the afternoon redevelopment on the second front being in the far eastern and southern portions of the area. Highs will generally reach the mid to upper 70s. The end of the weekend looks quite pleasant, with highs in the low to mid 70s and a good amount of sunshine. This continues into the early part of next week, though highs will climb a bit into the 80s by Tuesday into midweek. A few storms are possible on Tuesday, with this transition to somewhat warmer temperatures. The end of the week into the following weekend looks potentially active, with a weather pattern more favorable for some rounds of showers and storms across the area. It's still several days away, so things could still change. But at this range, it looks like one of the better chances we've seen for rain in a little while. Now, we're going to change it up a little bit today and begin with some sports stories first thing. In college football, UNI looks to clean up deficiencies against Idaho State. Ethan Petrick is the author, and the story begins with a photograph showing Northern Iowa quarterback Will McClellan as he fires a pass downfield past Idaho State earlier this season. The Panthers host Western Illinois in their regular season finale Saturday at the Unidome. Dateline Cedar Falls. For Northern Iowa head football coach Mark Farley, the winless Panthers have no secrets left following losses to Iowa State and Weber State. Quote, "We have been exposed," Farley said. The UNI offense struggled with turnovers, consistency in pass protection, and cultivating a ground game in the first 2 weeks of the season. At the same time, the defense showed flashes of excellence, but surrendered explosive plays, failed to create turnovers, and suffered a pair of sackless showings. Heading into a battle with Ohio State 0-2, Farley knows it does not get much easier for UNI 0-2. Despite entering their Week 3 bout with no wins, Idaho State faced two FBS opponents in Utah State and San Diego State in the first 2 weeks. In their losses to the Aztecs and the Aggies, the Bengals threw for 322 and 323 yards, respectively. Idaho State's 322.5 yards per game makes the Bengals the fifth most potent passing attack in the FCS through 2 weeks of action. It's a concerning thought for Farley following the Panthers' tough outing against Weber State. Quote, "They are throwing the ball on us right now, and that is all these guys do," Farley said. Quote, "There is a lot to clean up and a lot to get done in the phases of the game that they will try to exploit, as they should, because that is what is on film. you are going to get exploited if it's on film, unquote. With Friday serving as a travel day for the Panthers as they embark on their second road test of the season, the Panthers miss out on a day of potential prep work. However, Farley will not let that serve as an excuse on Saturday. Short week or no short week, Farley said the Panthers have to correct their issues ahead of Week 3 contest. Quote, "You have a short week, but it is obvious it has got to get done," Farley said. "It does not matter if it's a long or a short week. We have to get it done going into this week," unquote. Farley does not expect his team to fully fix itself in 1 week, but he said he wants to see his team in a position to win before the bye week. Quote, "We just have to get our act together in the phases that we are giving up big plays," Farley said. "The way you clean that up is getting better at what you do. They are going to attack it in very similar ways." According to Farley, he expects Idaho State to play inspired in its home opener and will not overlook the Bengals, who were picked last in the Big Sky preseason poll. Quote, "This team is, they have played two FBS teams, and it is their first home game," Farley said. Quote, "They will be excited, and they are probably licking their chops about what they can do," unquote. In year one of the Cody Hawkins era in Pocatello, Idaho State appears to be locked in a perpetual quarterback competition, if not a quarterback-by-committee approach. True freshman quarterback Jordan Cook leads the Bengals in attempts and yards through the first two games of the season. Cook started the first two games of the season, completing 54.2% of his 72 attempts for 362 yards and two touchdowns with three interceptions. Backup quarterback Hunter Hayes saw action in both of Idaho State's games and, statistically, appears the more efficient passer. The junior from Cody, Wyoming, completed 60.5% of his 38 attempts for 259 yards and three touchdowns with one interception. Hayes's passer rating outshines Cook's as well, 138.57 to 97.23. Cook appears fairly cemented as the Bengals starter, though you and I should expect to see both of Idaho State's options under center on Saturday. As explosive as the Bengals' passing game proved to be in the first 2 weeks, the Idaho State ground game looks ineffective and unreliable at best, with 123 total yards, including 22 yards against San Diego State on the season. The Bengals own an abysmal 2.6 yards per carry average on 47 attempts and have lost a combined 47 yards on 7 tackles for loss. Defensively, Idaho State allowed both the Aggies and the Aztecs to dominate on the ground, with 709 rushing yards allowed through the first two games. The Bengals own a nation-worst 342.0 rushing yards allowed per game average. Kickoff for Saturday's game is slated for 5 p.m. from Holt Arena in Pocatello. And listeners, this game is Saturday at 5 p.m. Central Time, and it will be played on the radio at KCVM 93.5 FM and on TV on ESPN+. Next, Ethan Petrick takes a look at high school football. Hudson shocks Jessup with comeback win. Dateline Jessup. Hudson led Jessup for exactly 1 minute and 55 seconds on Friday night. It was all the time the Pirates, 3-0, need to return home with a win over the Jayhawks, 1-2, by the slimmest of margins, 22-21. Hudson head coach Justin Brecky said he was proud of the grit showed by his squad in the come-from-behind victory. Quote, "We have a lot of fighters," Brecky said. "Their heart, their grit is incomparable," unquote. One series after being halted on fourth and goal at the Jessup 2-yard line, Hudson found the end zone as quarterback Camden Davis connected with Drew Sundin on a 13-yard pitch and catch to cut a 21-14 Jessup lead to 21-20. Instead of looking for the tie, The Pirates lined up for a two-point conversion. Davis took the snap and rolled to his right, finding sophomore Tate Van Dyke 5 yards deep in the Jessup end zone on a curl route to put Hudson ahead for the first time with 1 minute 55 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. Jessup managed to drive the ball deep into Hudson territory on its final possession, but penalties stalled the Jayhawks' drive and allowed the Pirates to hang on for a win. Hudson needed the come-from-behind effort on Friday night, thanks to a big first half for the Jayhawks. Quarterback Ryan Treptow connected on a 7-yard strike to Wyatt Vanderwerf at 6 minutes 24 mark of the first quarter. After forcing a Hudson punt on the ensuing drive, Treptow found the end zone again on a 1-yard quarterback keeper with 7 minutes 5 seconds to go in the first half. The Jayhawks converted a 3rd and 16 with a double reverse pass from Kale Shizzle to Treptow prior to the touchdown. Hudson railed back with a pair of touchdowns in short order. Davis scored on a QB keeper of his own from the 1-yard line at the 3-minute 33 mark of the second quarter. Just over a minute later, junior Kian Creel fielded a Jessup punt at around his own 45-yard line, returning the boot for the game touchdown. Jessup broke the 14-14 tie as Vanderwerf scored on a 4-yard touchdown run to put the Jayhawks ahead 21-14 at halftime and force Hudson's late-game heroics. Quote, "Our guys played really hard," Jessup head coach Jacob McMartin said. Quote, "They have competed hard for 3 weeks. That is something we have not done here in a long time. I could not be more proud of that," unquote. Here are 5 things fans are buzzing about after the Pirates win. The game winner. According to Davis, the message from Brecky going into Hudson's game-winning drive was, quote, "We have to get this thing in or we are screwed," unquote. Davis answered the call with his touchdown pass to Sundin, who Davis described as the go-to receiver for the play the Pirates dialed up on 3rd and 9 from the Jessup 13. Quote, "He is one of my top receivers," Davis said. "That play is just designed for him. We rep that a lot, and that is his play," unquote. Moments later, Brecky took a gamble that paid off. According to Brecky, playing for a tie never crossed his mind, and he made the decision to go for 2 following Davis and Sundin's touchdown connection. Brecky said he did not want to see Jessup's offense in overtime and wanted to ride the hot hand of his team. Quote, "I was thinking about that the first time already," Brecky said. Quote, "We have done it on the road. Jessup's offense from the 10-yard line was very potent. We did not want to see that offense out there. We would do anything to keep that from coming out." Quote, "We were rolling. We had the momentum, and we rolled with it," unquote. Kreil's special impact. Every time Kian Creel got the ball in his hands on special teams on Friday, a big play seemed imminent. In addition to his 55-yard punt return touchdown, Creel set up Hudson's game-winning touchdown with a 25-yard punt return to the Jessup 15. He also managed a big-time punt return of around 45 yards in the third quarter, which set up a Hudson drive that stalled out at the Jessup 18 via a turnover on downs. According to Creel, the Pirates placed a greater emphasis on special teams, allowing him to find success against the Jayhawks. Quote, "I could not have done it without the guys in front of me," Creel said. "Every practice, we will do punt return for 30 minutes. I feel like we are really taking special teams really seriously this year, and it is paying off," unquote. Hudson's second half defense. After giving up 3 touchdowns in the first half, doubling Jessup's scoring production on the season, the Hudson defense responded in the second half with a shutout. Brecky said the response from his defense in the second half demonstrated a lot of grit. Quote, "It was not pretty," Brecky said. "I am sure they smoked us in yards, but we just kept playing. That was our motto tonight. This is what I am so proud about," unquote. Jessup's fight. A year ago, Hudson defeated Jessup 37-0. The Jayhawks' ability to regroup this season and nearly knock off the Pirates showed their head coach a lot about who they are. Quote, "It shows that our kids want it," Mick Martin said, "and that we have kids here that work really hard, and they want to be successful, and they want to change the perception of what the Jayhawk football is." Quote, "They made a decision last spring that they were going to do that, that they were going to do that. I'm really proud of our seniors that kind of took charge of that," unquote. Triptau, stars in loss. A significant factor in Jessup's strong first-half showing proved to be the play of Triptau. From extending drives with his feet to scoring a pair of touchdowns, the Jayhawks' junior quarterback made the most of his opportunities against Hudson. McMartin spoke glowingly of and cited Triptau, who he described as smarter than himself, as a key reason the Jayhawks doubled their season scoring output in just the first half on Friday. Quote, "Me and him worked together on building this game plan," McMartin said. "I wanted to make sure me and him were on the same page. It did not feel like I put him in a good position to be success the first few weeks." Quote, "Being able to utilize his talents helped us a ton this game." College football, Iowa State hits road for the road title with Ohio. Dateline Ames. The Iowa State football team hits the road for the first time this season as the Cyclones head east for a matchup with Ohio on Saturday. The Cyclones, 1-1, look for a rebound following a home loss to Iowa against a Bobcats 2-1 team playing just their second home game of the season. Iowa State head coach Matt Campbell described the matchup with Ohio as a great challenge for his team in, quote, "one of the great MAC environments," unquote. Quote, "You are talking about one of the premier programs in the Mid-American Conference," Campbell said. "A team that played in the Mid-American Conference Championship a year ago, as well-coached a football team as I have seen coming out of the conference," unquote. The first round game of the year, Campbell said it takes a great importance as Iowa State readies for the beginning of Big 12 conference play next week. Quote, "In a multitude of ways, you are playing a really good opponent," Campbell said. "You are playing a team that has had great success and understands how to win. You are going on the road. You are traveling for the first time. I think it is huge. As we looked at the schedule, you do not always love going on the road, but it is a must-have, especially before you get into the conference slate," unquote. Led by third-year head coach Tim Albin, who took over the program after serving as the offensive coordinator for former head coach Frank Solich, the Bobcats went 10-4 in 2022, with a 7-1 mark in the MAC East. Ohio advanced to the conference championship game, losing to Toledo 17-7. Campbell described the Bobcats as a well-rounded team with plenty of experience. Quote, "They run to the football on defense," Campbell said. "They are physical up front on offense, and they have a great quarterback. It will be the best quarterback we have played against so far this season, and one of the best quarterbacks we have seen in a long time," unquote. Iowa State defensive coordinator John Heacock also highlighted Ohio starting quarterback Curtis Rourke. A graduate senior, Rourke threw 3,256 yards and 25 touchdowns with 4 interceptions in 2022. The younger brother of former Ohio starting quarterback Nathan Rourke, a current member of the Jacksonville Jaguars practice squad, Rourke has appeared in 27 games during his Ohio career, serving as the starter under center in all but one of those appearances. Heacock called Rourke as good a quarterback as Iowa State has faced this season. He also added that he would like to see the defense shore up its run defense against a strong Ohio offense. Quote, "They are a veteran crew," Heacock said. "They know how to handle all the different scenarios. They have handled adversity. It will be a tremendous challenge for us. It will be as steep a challenge as we have played on our side of the football," unquote. The Cyclones have surrendered 110.5 yards on average in their first two games of the 2023 season. Iowa State gave up 112 yards on the ground against Iowa. Ohio has averaged 153.7 yards on the ground through its first three games. Quote, "I am really impressed with their team," Hecox said. "I am impressed with Ohio U. I have always had respect for them. They have had great coaches pass through there. They have had great players pass through there," unquote. In addition to providing Iowa State a great challenge, the trip to Athens, Ohio offers seven Iowa State student athletes and three coaches, including Campbell and Hecox, the chance to return to their home state. Despite the chance to return home, Campbell said it is not his focus or the other native Ohioans. Quote, "My emotions have gone into our football team," responding to Saturday, Campbell said. Quote, "Saturday was an emotional game, highs and lows. I think the thing that all of us have been Zoom focused on is what is the urgency for this young football team to correct what we did not do well Saturday. That is really where we have to put our time and effort right now." Quote, "Every game brings unique situations. First road game, first time you are going to an area where three players are from that area. I think handling the mental piece of that is big, especially when you have a young football team. We have some young guys that are playing good football from the state of Ohio, and it is neat that we are able to get at least two games in the next couple of weeks where we get a chance to be back in Ohio," unquote. Hecox echoed Campbell's comments on returning to the Buckeye State. Quote, "It is where most of us are from," Hecox said. "So it means a lot. The game is still the most important. All our family would tell you that. We all know how important the game is. It is also a chance to see brothers and family and all of those kinds of things. These kids will get to see parents. It's really a cool opportunity," unquote. And listeners, here is where you can hear the game being played. It is Saturday at 11 a.m. Central, and it is in Purdon Stadium in Athens, Ohio. Radio has it on KCNZ at 6:50 a.m., and on TV, it's being played on ESPNU. Next, in high school volleyball, the buzz from the Dyke, New Hampshire, Sumner Fredericksburg, Grundy Center, Triangular, Dateline Sumner. In a clash of Class 2A volleyball powers Tuesday, the alpha of a trio of great teams flexed its muscles. Top-ranked Dyke New Hartford made relatively easy work of number 3 Grundy Center and number 4 Sumner Fredericksburg in a triangular that featured three teams that very well could make the 2A state semifinals in November. The Wolverines showed their offensive power, their smothering defense, and smooth transition passing game all at once, while staying unblemished in a season that has seen them take on some of the best squads in the state, regardless of class. Quote, "The girls came in, and they're both such quality teams, and we knew they had to come in and have our focus, and everyone had to know what their role and assignments were," said head coach Diane Harms. Quote, "And the girls really did a nice job of keeping that focus for the night on what their assignment was," unquote. However, Grundy Center also got a dig in at Sumner Fredericksburg, with the Spartans winning 2-1 against their NICL rival, Dyke Diamondites. Dyke New Hartford played both matches with the same ruthless efficiency that put them in the number one spot in the state. The Wolverines are now 18-0 and have only dropped one set all season. Dyke New Hartford took Grundy Center down first, 25-17, 25-13. The Spartans rallied in the first set when they were down 20-11 to get five straight points, but the Wolverines recalibrated and got the win, then ended the second set with little trouble. Quote, "Both of those teams, really good competition. We knew coming into it, we'd have to play probably our best, and I'm just really happy with how our team came together, even when Grundy had a little bit of a comeback on us, just staying strong with each other and leaning on each other when we need it," said Dyke New Hartford senior Jaden Peterson. Dyke New Hartford was fast with Sumner Fredericksburg dispatching the Cougars 25-14 in the first set and 25-10 in the second. Quote, "We just want to come in every night and play hard," Harm said. "We know that the NICL is so strong top to bottom. And in the state of Iowa, volleyball is so strong that we just are taking care of what we need to take care of and focusing on ourselves and just giving our best effort every night." Grundy Center came into Tuesday's triangular with their sights set on Sumner Fredericksburg, and they got their chance in the first match of the evening. The Spartans lost the first set 25-18 before striking back and winning the next two at 25-20 and 17-15. Quote, "I was very proud of the girls. We did do what we came to do," Grundy Center coach Lori Willis said. Quote, "You can't mimic what Dyke New Hartford does in our own gym, but to be able to compete with them and make them call a timeout, do some things that we know how to do, and then adjust to what they're doing to us, made us better and stronger tonight," unquote. Arlie Willis was the offense with 20 kills, 15 of them against Sumner Fredericksburg. According to her, the Cougars have long been a challenge, and Tuesday signaled that Grundy Center is a contender for the state. Quote, "I feel like we did what we needed to do today, and this year, we really wanted to beat Sumner," Carly said. Quote, "Because they went to state last year, and they took one of their matchups with us last year, so we really wanted to prove a point that we're back and better than last year," unquote. Cougars gain experience. The Cougars lost both matches, which lengthened their losing streak to 5, and have lengthened their losing streak to 5 games. However, head coach Sarah Booman said they're not discouraged. They knew they were facing the number 1 and number 3 teams in the state, and it's a reminder that they're always playing the best in the NICL. Quote, "We knew coming in tonight it was going to be tough, tough matches," Booman said, adding that they were out of the system against Grundy Center's offense. Quote, "But we did come back, and I felt like we played our Cougar volleyball that we needed to play and kind of controlled the controllables on our side," unquote. Northern Iowa commit Isabel Elliott also commented on her gratitude for the competition going into college, with Peterson and another Wolverine, Marin Bixby, becoming her future teammates at UNI. All three play together in the same junior club, and Elliott looks forward to staying on their side of the net. Quote, "I'm so excited. We play club together, so it's so much fun, and just to be able to be on the same side of the net is so fun. But also competing against them is also awesome," Elliott said. "They work hard and just get to experience how they work and how they compete," unquote. Mayor's annual fun run brings fourth graders to downtown Waterloo on Tuesday. Dateline Waterloo. About 1,000 fourth grade students from Waterloo public and private schools will take to the streets for the 24th Mayor's annual fun run sponsored by the Waterloo Kiwanis Club. The run is scheduled at 9:45 a.m. Tuesday at the River Loop Expo Plaza in downtown Waterloo. The fun run stresses the importance of students being active and developing lifelong health and fitness habits. Before the run, there will be a short program by KWWL's Ron Steele, who will serve as the Master of Ceremonies, and Mayor Quentin Hart will kick off the event. State Representative Tammy Brown Powers will be the event's speaker and will emphasize the importance of healthy living. The run begins at the corner of 4th and Commercial Streets, continuing on 4th Street across the river to Mulberry Street, turning on Mulberry Street, then turning on 5th Street back over the river, and turning on Jefferson Street back to the River Loop Expo Plaza. Main Street Waterloo volunteers, Waterloo Kiwanis members, and the Waterloo Police Department will be placed along the route to ensure safety of all runners. All students will receive a T-shirt that says, "I ran with the mayor." Kids of character will be recognized from each school. Following the run, students will eat a snack lunch at the River Loop Expo Plaza. At approximately 11:45 a.m., students will board buses and spend an afternoon learning about healthy activities and venues offered in the Cedar Valley. And now, listeners, we'd like to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, September 15th on IRIS, I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Challenged. Now, this announcement.
I might not know you, but I still care about you. So if you feel hopeless or if you've been thinking about suicide, please talk to someone. A friend, parent, teacher, or coworker. If you can't talk to them or feel like you have no one there to listen, turn to Your Life Iowa. Things can get better. There are people who want to help you. Please reach out now at yourlifeiowa.org. Brought to you by the Iowa Department of Public Health.
Now, listeners, let's turn to the opinion section. Our first editorial today comes from the New York Times, written by Jessica Gross. People don't want to be teachers anymore. Can you blame them? Every week, it seems as if there's another disturbing story about how difficult it is to be a teacher in 21st century America. I'm not talking about the typical day-to-day work of teaching core subjects to children with varied academic and emotional needs, which is already a demanding job, made more so by the challenging aftermath of 2020. I am talking about teachers getting fired after criticizing a school district's ban on students learning a Dolly Parton and Miley Cyrus song about rainbows and acceptance, or for attending drag shows on their own time, away from school grounds, or for using a worksheet that went along with a young adult novel about a black teenager being stopped by police. Last year, the Washington Post tallied more than 160 educators who had been fired or resigned in the prior 2 years due to culture war issues. There are reports of harassment and threats emanating from school board meetings. Of course, I'm also talking about the potentially deadly violence teachers may face just by showing up for work. While school shootings are still statistically rare, in recent years, the number of occurrences has gone up significantly, and it's hard not to be affected by the drumbeat of news stories about their prevalence. Perhaps most indelible is the shooting earlier this year of the first grade teacher Abigail Schwerner in Newport News, Virginia, by a 6-year-old student. Last year, my colleagues in Opinions Video Department highlighted the crisis of teachers quitting because they were pushed to their limits by children's pandemic-related behavioral and emotional setbacks, staffing shortages that forced them to take on roles beyond their normal remit, including lunch and bus duties, and the aforementioned culture war vitriol. The demoralization of today's teachers is a problem that may be followed by an even more damaging systemic issue. Fewer college and university students want to become teachers, and the new teacher pipeline is drying up. Quote, the current state of teaching profession is at or near its lowest levels in 50 years, according to a working paper published in November by the Annenberg Institute for School Reform at Brown University. In it, Matthew Kraft of Brown and Melissa Arnold Lyon of the University of Albany painted a dire picture of the profession. Perceptions of teacher prestige have fallen between 20% and 47% in the last decade, to be at or near the lowest levels recorded over the last half century. Interest in the teaching profession among high school seniors and college freshmen has fallen 50% since the 1990s and 38% since 2010, reaching the lowest level in the last 50 years. The number of new entrants into the profession has fallen by roughly 1/3 over the last decade, and the proportion of college graduates that go into teaching is at a 50-year low. Teachers' job satisfaction is also at the lowest level in 5 decades, with the percent of teachers who feel the stress of their job is worth it dropping from 81% to 42% in the last 15 years. When I spoke to Kraft, he said that while we're in a moment of really acute crisis right now, the trend of declining respect and interest and entry and satisfaction in the profession isn't new. It started more than a decade ago. He said that while it's tough to pinpoint, the cause is partly a combination of stagnant real wages for teachers, while wages were rising in other sectors for college-educated workers, the increasing cost of higher education in general, and declining respect for the profession overall. It's important to note that teacher shortages are not uniformly spread across schools, districts, or states. Kraft told me that where there are shortages, typically cuts along racial and socioeconomic lines. There are particular shortages in rural schools and for the STEM and special education teachers, for example. The shortages may be hitting public schools the hardest because charter and private schools can be a bit more nimble about payment and staff allocation. But most kids go to traditional public schools, and when the issue is playing out at such a macro level, there may be spillover, Kraft said. So what can be done to help get more teachers into the profession and keep them there? Cutting the cost of a teaching degree is one lever to pull, whether that's through student loan forgiveness or college scholarships. Dorinda Carter Andrews, the chair for the Department of Teacher Education at Michigan State University, told me that her school's teacher preparation program is moving from a 5-year model to a 4-year model because the 5th year, which was traditionally an internship year, became a financial hardship for many students. They were interning in schools full-time without pay, and so could not take on additional work. Quote, "We have curated the year-long internship into the senior year," Carter Andrews said. MSU wants to be responsive to students and make sure they aren't going into debt for a profession that still underpays its employees. Teacher pay is an obvious concern, but it is really state-dependent. According to the National Education Association, as of last year, the average starting salary for a teacher with a master's degree is about $39,000 a year in Colorado versus about $60,000 in Washington State. Earlier this year, the NEA reported that when adjusted for inflation, quote, the average salary of teachers has actually declined by an estimated 6.4% or $3,644 over the past decade, unquote. Susan Moore Johnson, a research professor in education at Harvard, told me that over the years she has interviewed thousands of teachers and says that while no one expects to get rich from the profession, most do expect to have careers that provide for a middle-class life. Quote, I think teaching as a career has long been seen as something you could count on, where you would have a job, where you could count on a retirement plan and health insurance, she said. And now that's not necessarily the case in some places. Striking teachers have written about relying on food stamps. In a new poll of Texas teachers, a majority cited poor pay and benefits as a major source of stress. But perhaps just as important is that as a society, we need to give teachers more respect. I heard from several teachers and educational leaders that although there was an initial surge of support for teachers at the beginning of the pandemic, that dissolved over time. Quote, there was this kind of swelling of pride in that the teaching profession is selfless and that we're very skilled and parents are suitably impressed with how much the teachers could accomplish even under duress. So that had a honeymoon, and then the honeymoon was over, said Wendy Patterson, the dean of the School of Education at SUNY Buffalo State. Ali Prabula, who taught at a public elementary school in Pennsylvania starting in 2019 and ending up leaving the profession at the end of last school year, told me that teaching was a job that she always wanted to do from the time she was a little kid. Burnout and overwork were factors in her decision to move on, but a lack of respect is a glaring issue that she wants to see rectified. Quote, I don't know how this would ever happen or what would have to happen to get this to change, but just as a whole, the parents, the community in general, just need to trust teachers, she said. Prabhuila added that many teachers she used to work with are questioning whether they want to remain in the job at this point. If we want to attract and retain teachers, we're going to need to do better. Because I don't want to leave you on a totally depressing note, I wanted to share a silver lining. Patterson said that in her many years as an educator, she's seen the profession ebb and flow, and that right now she's seeing more of a particular type of educator. People coming to the profession later in life after trying different career paths. With the caveat that teacher pay in New York is among the highest in the nation, and therefore a relatively stable career option for someone with a passion for education, I was inspired speaking to Chloe Mokadam, who now teaches high school science, but spent her early 20s in theater school and then pursuing a master's in biology. She had the choice to attend a prestigious PhD program or go for her Master's of Science Education at Buffalo State. And she chose the latter, even though her parents, quote, were not super mega supportive at first, unquote. She's truly passionate about passing on her love of science to her high schoolers. Quote, these are kids that need extra preparation, extra care, extra attention, just because of the world that they're facing, but also they are our future leaders. They're the future scientists. They're the future nurses and doctors. They're the future, everything. And we need to be really tender and cautious and careful and protective over education, because not only does this shape their minds, it shapes who they are going to be as people, unquote. We need more people like her working with our kids every day. And it's not just parents who should care. There's a reason Florida has one of the worst teacher shortages right now. With culture war madness around every corner, why would anyone sign up for that? From the New York Times, an opinion piece written by Mandy K. Cohen. As a doctor, a mother, and the head of the CDC, I recommend that you get the latest COVID booster. We have come a long way since the early days of 2020. Back then, I was the head of North Carolina's Department of Health and Human Services and working alongside Governor Roy Cooper to navigate the uncertainty, the challenges, and the fear around COVID-19. My extended family was in New York, the epicenter of the U.S. outbreak. I didn't realize then that it would be over a year until I saw them in person again. All I wanted was for them to be safe. Now, as I lead the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, we are in such a different place. No federal mandates, no travel restrictions. With vaccines, testing, and treatment, we are once again enjoying fun-filled family vacations and celebrating milestones together. While we would all love to leave COVID-19 in the rearview mirror for good, the virus is still here, and it will probably always be with us. The good news is that we have the tools to help people avoid serious illness, hospitalization, death, and long COVID symptoms. We can minimize the virus's damage to our lives by using one of our most effective tools in combating the virus, updated COVID-19 vaccines. COVID-19 vaccines are the best way to give the body the ability to keep the virus from causing significant harm. Extensive studies and real-world experience have shown that they are safe and that they work, and most Americans take them. Since the COVID-19 vaccines became widely available in 2021, more than 270 million Americans have received shots, preventing countless deaths and hospitalizations. Some viruses, however, change over time. This coronavirus is one of them. It finds ways to evade our immune systems by constantly evolving. That's why our vaccines need to be updated to match the changed virus. Even though many Americans have been exposed to previous versions of the virus because they've been infected, that protection decreases over time. This is partly why you can get COVID more than once, and why you can still get very sick even if you had it before. That's why the CDC is recommending an updated COVID-19 vaccine, which is better matched to the currently circulating virus for everyone aged 6 months and older. COVID-19 continues to pose a health threat, especially to older Americans. From January to July 2023, 88% of deaths from COVID-19 were among people who were aged 65 years or older. Those with certain underlying health conditions, approximately 70% of American adults, and weakened immune systems are also at greater risk than younger, healthier Americans. What's more, everyone who gets infected with COVID can develop long COVID, and I don't want any American to experience that if it can be avoided. People with long COVID can have many ongoing symptoms, like extreme tiredness, shortness of breath, and headache, that diminish their quality of life. So far, studies have found that people who may be more likely than others to get long COVID were unvaccinated against the virus, got severely ill from COVID, though even mild cases can also lead to longer-term symptoms, or had underlying health conditions. These vaccines were put through extensive clinical trials before they were widely introduced in 2021, and since then, their safety has been intensely monitored, with more than 670 million doses administered in the United States over more than 2 years. Our understanding of them means that, like the annual flu vaccine, manufacturers can now focus on developing the best match for circulating strains. The Biden administration has been working to ensure easy and convenient access to the updated COVID-19 vaccine so that most people will still be able to get free ones. For people with health insurance, most plans will cover the COVID vaccine at no cost. People who don't have health insurance or with health plans that do not cover the cost can get free vaccines from their local health centers and pharmacies participating in the CDC's programs. To find a participating location, visit vaccines.gov. That's vaccines.gov. If you get COVID-19, remember that treatment is available. Paxlovid, pills you take twice a day for 5 days, can help reduce the severity of illness and may help prevent long COVID. It works best when taken soon after symptoms begin. That's why people with COVID symptoms should get tested and ask their doctor about treatment. In addition to treatments such as Paxlovid, we have other tools to protect our health, which is widely available at-home tests and common-sense strategies like improving ventilation, masking, and hand-washing. These tools can help prevent COVID infections specifically, as well as other viral infections that are common in the coming winter months. On the basis of patterns we have seen so far, the CDC believes the United States will most likely continue to experience COVID-19 in somewhat seasonal upticks. However, there is good news. This is the first fall and winter virus season in which vaccines are, or soon will be, available for all three viruses responsible for most of the hospitalizations and deaths: the coronavirus, respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, and the flu virus. The more people who get the shots, the bigger the difference it can make in how many Americans are sick and the ability of our healthcare system to handle influxes of patients. As a doctor, a mother, and the head of the CDC, I would not recommend anything to others that I wouldn't recommend for my own family. My 9 and 11-year-old daughters, my husband, my parents, and I will be rolling up our sleeves to get our updated COVID-19 vaccines, along with our flu shots soon. I hope you and the people you care about will do the same. Our author here is Mandy Cohen, who is the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Next, from the Storm Lake Times Pilot, an opinion piece written by Art Cullen, Pipeline Problems. And it begins with a photograph of workers stacking steel pipelines and there's a caterpillar crane with apparently a magnetic head on it, picking up these big pipe sections and stacking them five high. A while back, we would have bet you that the Summit and Navigator CO2 pipelines planned for Iowa were a done deal. They are designed to capture carbon and tax credits for the ethanol industry, our sacred cow. It would be disingenuous for a state that clamors constantly for more ethanol not to allow pipelines to strip away the enormous amounts of carbon dioxide the stills generate. All the leading Iowa names are on board with the ethanol train, from Brandstad to Vilsack. What could go wrong? South Dakota. What's in it for South Dakota? So the CO2 can reach its terminus in a spent fracking hole deep beneath North Dakota? Nothing. And there's not enough in it for North Dakota either. Regulators in both states put the brakes on the Summit and Navigator pipelines, organized primarily to serve the ethanol industry in Iowa. That throws the routes into doubt. Iowa began eminent domain proceedings this month in Fort Dodge on Summit Pipeline. That hearing will take months. Meanwhile, South Dakota has ruled that at least three counties can enforce their own zoning ordinances and block the pipelines. North Dakota rejected the initial Summit route application. If this were an oil or natural gas pipeline, there is little doubt it would win approval in the Dakotas. Iowa regulators seldom have met a pipeline they didn't like. Those CO2 pipelines mainly benefit Iowa and are organized primarily by Iowa interests. If you were in Sioux Falls, you might ask what happens to pipelines when ethanol demand dries up. If you were in North Dakota, you might wonder about the feasibility of pumping poisonous gas into a hole and what happens over time. While the permitting process bogs down, the politics of pipelines are not getting better. Former Congressman Steve King has been making noise over it. Not a good sign for the establishment interests. The Iowa Utilities Board has asked for a description of areas that could be endangered by a leak, raising more questions. Skepticism of corporate grabs is not waning, especially among rural Iowans. Although most of the proposed route is already locked up with voluntary easements, a deep resentment of eminent domain, the taking of private land for a corporate purpose, exists in Iowa. The rulings in the Dakotas will energize the opposition to redouble their efforts before state commissions and the courts. That can't be good for the pipeline prospects in Iowa, and that isn't good for the corn ethanol industry. Now, let's go back to reading local news from the Courier. Mercy One opens new allergy and immunology location in downtown Waterloo. Dateline Waterloo. Mercy One has opened a new allergy and immunology clinic in Waterloo. Mercy One Grand Crossing Allergy and Immunology Care provides evaluation, diagnostic, and management care for adults and children with allergy, asthma, and immunologic disorders. Mercy One providers Dan Dallin, MD, Philippe Javier, MD, and Prudvi Regula, MD, offer evaluation of the following: allergic reactions, anaphylaxis, asthma, drug allergies, eczema, environmental allergies like hay fever, food allergies, hives, and angioedema, immunodeficiency, sinus disease, and nasal polyps, stinging insect allergies. Mercy One Grand Crossing Allergy and Immunology Care is located at 21 West Jefferson Street, Suite 102 in Waterloo. It is open from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Teacher Education Celebration joins the University of Northern Iowa's Family Weekend. Dateline Cedar Falls. The University of Northern Iowa's 60th UNI Teacher Education Convocation and Celebration is scheduled to coincide for the first time with Family Weekend. This special ceremony on September 30th honors pre-service teachers who have met the criteria for acceptance into the UNI Teacher Education Program, the largest undergraduate educator preparation program in Iowa. About 700 future teachers have been admitted since the last convocation held in the spring of 2022. First held in 1991 and held semi-annually until recently, the convocation has honored thousands of future teachers and their commitment to the teaching profession. UNI graduates around 500 teaching majors annually and is in the top 1% of public institutions granting bachelor's degrees in education nationwide. More than 10,000 alumni are employed in school districts in all 99 Iowa counties. This year's ceremony will be held in two sessions at 9:45 and 11 a.m. in the Lang Hall Auditorium. Students may invite two guests to join them. If needed, there will be additional viewing via live streaming in Mocker Union. The program features Colleen Mulholland, the Dean of UNI's College of Education, as the guest speaker. Students will be recognized as they walk the stage and receive their traditional commemorative pin, which honors this milestone. A reception on Lang Lawn is planned between sessions. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Friday, September 15th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can listen to a recording of today's reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around Iowa that we record. Just go to our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service. Now, you may wish to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which will follow shortly.